We're in a collection called Upside Down, and we're going through each of the Beatitudes. It's a list of blessings in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount that really describe the value system of the kingdom, the way of God's kingdom. And so last week, we talked about blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. 2 weeks ago, we talked about blessed are the poor in spirit, and today we're going to continue in that by opening up to Matthew chapter 5, verse 5. This is the word of the Lord. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. One of my favorite authors and theologians, Brian Zond, he paraphrases it this way. Blessed are the quiet and content, the humble and unassuming, the gentle and trusting, who are not grasping and clutching for God, will personally guarantee their share when heaven and earth become one. I think out of all of the Beatitudes, this is one of my favorites. Jesus says, blessed are the meek, the humble, the quiet, the gentle, the nonviolent, the non-aggressive, for they are the ones who will inherit the world. I think out of all of the Beatitudes, this might be the hardest for us to believe, right? In our culture, we might say something like, blessed are the meek, for even though they come in last place, they will receive a participation trophy, right? That's kind of the ethos of our age. In our workplaces, in our classrooms, on our social media platforms, do we actually believe that it's the meek that will inherit the earth? Is there any other verse in the Bible that goes against the ethos of our age more than this one? Why? In our world, blessed are the opportunists. Blessed are the hustlers and the grinders. Blessed are the aggressive and the loud and the proud and the go-getters, right? In our world, blessed are the content creators, the social media influencers, the meme crafters, the platform builders, those that go viral and amass massive followings. But the meek, like, how are they supposed to inherit the earth? There's nothing sleek or sexy or cool about meekness. There's nothing to monetize about meekness. The meek don't get invited to speak at all the big conferences. The meek don't get profiled in the top 40 under 40. The meek aren't pushed on our For You pages, on our social media algorithms. Yet Jesus is saying here, it's the meek who will inherit the earth. Pete Scazzaro, author of Emotionally Healthy Church, he says this: the world honors the successful, high-impact players who are aggressive and make their mark. But Jesus says, blessed are those who inherit the earth. The blessed who inherit the earth are the meek, the unaggressive, the broken, the grief-stricken, the dependent who cannot live without God. He turns the world upside down. I mean, even think about American history for a moment. Think about all that we have taken by violence, by domination, by force. Think about all the countries that we have colonized. Think about all that we have stolen from indigenous people groups. Think about all the slaves that we captured and traded like they were meat. It's baffling to me that so many people claim that America is a Christian nation, but look at our history. Like, does that look Christian to you? What's Christian about it? Right? We didn't become the global superpower by being meek. We became the global superpower by being aggressive, by taking things by force, by way of violence. I imagine as Jesus was preaching this sermon, like the Roman soldiers at the edge of the crowd, they're listening in. And I bet you they were looking at each other with winks and smirks because they knew better, right? They knew how the real world worked. Right, Rome ruled the world. Caesar conquered the world not by being meek, but by being aggressive and violent, by waging war and by seizing power. And here this poor Jewish rabbi from nowhere is announcing that the meek will inherit the earth. It's laughable. And it certainly doesn't help. It's unfortunate that in English, the word meek rhymes with the word weak. And I think too often when we think about meekness, we think those two things are synonymous, right? When we think of meekness, we think of the passive, we think of the timid, we think of the conflict-avoidant person, the easily pushed around, the quiet to a fault. Have you seen social media this week? Have you seen Punch the Monkey, right? tragic. There's this monkey, and then this tragic story. He lost his mother, and he got really attached to this stuffed animal that kind of became the de facto mother in his life, and so he would drag it around. But he got imported to a different facility, and all the different monkeys were bullying him. And as I was preparing this message, I was like, man, I feel like when people think of meekness, they think of Punch. And social media, they were outraged. They're like, I'm going to fly over there. I'm going to rescue Punch. But it turns out the monkeys finally accepted him. So it's all a good story. But when we think about meekness, we think about people that are like Punch. We think about the weak-willed. We think about the people that are trampled over. But biblical meekness is not weakness. It's not frailty. It's not timidity. It's not about being pushovers or walked all over. I want to think about all the people in Scripture that are described as meek. Was David weak? David, who became the greatest king the world has ever known. Was Moses weak? Moses, who led an entire people group out of slavery and through 40 years in the wilderness to the promised land, overcoming giants to get in. Was Paul weak? Paul, who became the greatest living missionary in all of history, reaching unreached people groups all across the globe. Was Jesus weak? Jesus, who overcame death and sin on the cross. We wouldn't consider any of those people weak, yet we consider meekness weakness. But meekness is not weakness. One of my favorite definitions of meekness is power under control. More specifically, God's control. The word meek in the original language was used to describe reining in a stallion, right? If you think about a horse has immense power. This morning, Isaiah and I were talking about Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Anyone watching that? Game of Thrones fans? And, you know, in my mind, I used to think jousting seems like such a random sport. Like, how dangerous could it be? But this show depicts how violent and aggressive and how scary jousting is. But it's really because horses are so fast and so powerful and so strong. And so the definition of the word meek, the image that's invoked, is one of reining in the power of a stallion. A horse has immense power. It has power to transport people across far distances. It has the power to do agricultural work. But an untamed horse is dangerous. It can cause destruction. It can hurt people. And many, many years ago, I think over a decade ago, I found myself in Kazakhstan in a random village with missionaries. And we came across a boy who was walking his horse down the street. And I thought it was so cute. The horse was like a little tiny pony. And he looked at me. He's like, do you want to ride? I was like, of course, I'm American. I'm stupid. So I got on that horse. And for 5 seconds, it was really fun. But then I realized how high I was, and I could literally feel the horse's muscles like pulsing under my legs. And I was like, dude, this is a beast. And if he wanted, he could hurt me. And I think horses have an innate ability to sense fear. Did you know that? And so I think it started picking up on my fear. So it started like a light walk, but then it started like trotting. And I'm like, I'm starting to freak out, getting more scared. All of a sudden, like literally in a movie, it goes, ee-hee-hee! And it goes on its two hind legs. I get thrown off, land on my back, almost injured myself, almost died. Luckily, I didn't, right? That's the day I decided horses are not to be messed with, okay? They are dangerous if provoked. So horses are strong. In the same way, a proper dosage of medicine can heal the body or it could kill the body, right? A gentle breeze of wind has the power to refresh us on a nice breezy day, but a hurricane can destroy. Meekness is power under control. You know, we got Austin in the house. Many years ago, Austin asked me to go running with him. And if you know anything about Austin, man, Austin is like, he's an elite athlete, okay? He is so fast. He never gasses out. He actually enjoys running. I'm on the opposite spectrum, okay? And so when he asked me to go run with him, I was like, Austin, you have no business running with me. I'm in a completely different class. And so we start running. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, he's going to go on ahead. He's going to pace for himself. And he's going to meet me at the end. We're going to get boba or something, okay? The whole run, Austin, he stays by my side. He intentionally slows down. He reins in his ability to run hella fast to be with me. When I think about meekness, I think about Austin showing me pity. I think about Austin saying, poor Mickey who runs so slow, I got to keep him company. This is meekness. Meekness is power under control. Rebecca Eklund says this, for many of our predecessors, Meekness was a form of power, not of weakness. It referred not to those who never get angry, but to those who never lose their temper. The meek are not the weak, but the self-controlled. Not those who shrink back, but those who willingly choose to yield. We might paraphrase the Beatitude, blessed are those who yield to others and to God. And I love that. Meekness is yielding our power to God. Meekness is yielding our power unto others. One of my favorite theologians, N.T. Wright, says, meekness is power submitted to love. Instead of using our power to take from others and seize by force, instead of using our power to get ahead and dominate, instead of using our power to manipulate and coerce and control our circumstances, meekness is yielding our power in service of God and in service of others for the sake of love. Man, isn't that powerful? Jesus, he modeled this so well. We always know Jesus as the Lion of the tribe of Judah, but Jesus, he chose to come as the Lamb of God. What made Jesus so unique was that despite having all the power and authority of heaven, he still chose to come as a lamb, to lay down his power and give his life, to lay down his God privilege to serve the least of us. Right? He had the power, if you think about it, to destroy all of his enemies, to take the throne by force and enforce his will and his rule and his reign. But he chose instead to yield his power in love and serve. That's meekness. And listen, the world can't grasp this kind of power. Strength proceeding from weakness, gain proceeding from loss, power proceeding from meekness. But this is the upside down way of the kingdom. You know, a month from now, I tell this story all the time, it's so powerful. A month from now, we're going to celebrate Palm Sunday. Still trying to decide if we're going to have palm leaves in church. You know, you can wave it during worship, be hella cute, take a little Instagram photo. A month from now, we're going to celebrate Palm Sunday, the day that Jesus rode into Jerusalem as people waved their palm branches and shouted, Hosanna. And if you've ever wondered, why were they waving palm branches? Like, is it just aesthetically pleasing? Is it just kinfolky? Like, why were they waving palm branches? You have to know that 150 years prior, before Jesus rides into town on a donkey, there's a man named Judas Maccabeus, and his nickname was the Hammer. He could be a professional wrestler. He's the Hammer, right? Judas Maccabeus, he led the entire Jewish people into revolution, into revolt against their oppressors. So they overthrew their oppressors by power and by force. And so the crowds, they celebrated by waving palm branches in the air. And to commemorate the victory, Judas Maccabeus, he stamped an image of palm branches on their coins, which symbolized victory for the Jewish people over their oppressors. So every time they looked at their coin, they would remember, oh, we overthrew our oppressors. We overcame trial and hardship, and we won. Now, 150 years later, the Jewish people, they're under foreign rule again. They're oppressed once again. And as Jesus comes into town, they're waving their branches and they're saying, Hosanna, will you save us? They're essentially saying, Jesus, will you save us like we were saved before? Will you save us like our ancestors were saved before? Would you lead our people into overthrowing our oppressors and seizing their power just the way the Hammer did 150 years ago? And that's the kind of king that they were expecting Jesus to be. But let's look at what kind of king Jesus is. If you look at Matthew 21, verse 5, see, your king comes to you, gentle and riding on a donkey, and on a colt, the foal of a donkey. Matthew, he's actually referencing a prophecy made by the prophet Zechariah hundreds of years ago. Another translation actually says, see, your king comes to you meek and riding on a donkey. It was significant that Jesus entered into Jerusalem on a donkey, because when Pilate, right, the Roman official Pilate, when he rode into Jerusalem, he rode in on a war horse surrounded by soldiers. The war horse represented power, aggression, empire, violence, and war. When a king came in on a war horse, he was making a statement. I have the power to destroy you. Bow down and submit, or I will make you. But on the other hand, Jesus, he rides in on a donkey. I don't know why. I just keep thinking of Shrek, right? Think about a donkey compared to a war horse. The donkey, on the other hand, represented humility, meekness, surrender. Jesus was intentionally making a statement about the kind of king that he was. A king who came not to bring violence and war, but a king who came to bring peace. A king who stepped off of his throne of privilege to love the least of these. A king who came to serve instead of be served. A king who surrendered his power instead of seizing power. A king who laid down his life willingly instead of taking life. And while Pilate and Rome had the upper hand for a moment, while Jesus was put to death and put in a tomb in the ground, while Rome continued ruling by force, let me ask you a question. Whose kingdom still stands to this day? The Roman Empire, as we once knew it, is no more. Their military force is no more. All the power that they had is no more. Yet the kingdom of God still stands and is ever advancing, ever increasing, even to this day. Why? Because the meek shall inherit the earth. And listen, this is good news. If you watch news and you see things like the Epstein Files cover up, if you watch the news and see global conflicts and genocide in our world, this is good news because although the powerful and the privileged and the violent seem to have a grasp on our world, although the people who trample over others to get ahead in life are on the top, although the proud and the arrogant rule and oppress, their days are numbered. Because in the end, it's the meek who will inherit the earth. And this is a powerful promise for me to hold on to. When I look in our world, I get sad. I get discouraged, likely like you. But Jesus is reminding us, although the proud and the powerful and the aggressive have the upper hand right now, this is not the end. The meek will inherit the earth. I want you to think how radical this actually is. Like, come on, imagine going to, how many of you work in tech? Imagine going to your tech company tomorrow, telling your boss, listen, I think we need to take the company in a whole new direction. Meekness, okay? This is the new vision for our company moving forward. Google, this is meekness now is the goal. It's the vision, right? Imagine if our government modeled this. How odd would we think that is and crazy? Kind of sad we live in a world that that's the truth. Imagine if social media embodied meekness, right? This wasn't just some cute sentiment that Jesus was saying. Jesus was making a political statement. It's statements like this that got Jesus killed. Why? He was telling the rulers and the oppressors, listen, you're on top right now, but your days are numbered because it's the meek who will inherit the earth. Your way of ruling will be no more. In the end, it's the meek who are going to come out on top. It's powerful, isn't it? Now, this beatitude is going to, it invites us into two things. There are two invitations that this beatitude gives us. The first, meekness is an invitation into rest. If we look at Matthew 11, 28 through 30, Jesus says, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Another translation actually has Jesus saying, I am meek and lowly in heart. Jesus is making it known that there is a correlation between meekness and rest. He's saying rest is the portion for those who are meek, while anxiety is the portion for those who seize. Why? Think about this. Because if it was all on you to get yourself to where you are, it's also all on you to keep yourself there. Right? If it was all on you to achieve your success, it's all on you to maintain your success. If it was all on you to obtain your power, it's all on you to defend your power. Not only that, but in the same way that you got ahead, you know there's someone lurking in the shadows that's going to wait for the right moment to knock you from the top. But meekness produces rest. When you try to do things in your own strength, you carry the weight of anxiety. You have to make it happen for yourself. And if you fail, you won't make it. But the meek, they know rest. Tim Keller once said, the meek are those who know they have nothing to defend and nothing to prove. Hey, can you imagine living like that? Having nothing to defend, having nothing to maintain, having nothing to protect, and having nothing to prove. See, it's significant that Jesus said, blessed are the meek, And he uses the word, for they will inherit the earth. The earth is seized by the violent and the aggressive, but it is inherited by the meek and the gentle. Inheritance is a family word. It's a relationship word. An inheritance isn't given. It's given. It's not earned. We don't earn an inheritance. We don't build an inheritance. It's simply given by virtue of relationship. It's not something you have to fight for. It's not something that you have to work for. It's something that you freely receive, something you rest in and receive. I don't know if I should mention this. My dad has an extensive coin collection. And he recently disclosed to me that it's worth millions of dollars. Like just these random coins that he's amassed throughout the years. Okay, so don't come rob my parents' house, okay? I'll never forget, when I was growing up, I had no ideas what these things were. Like he has these pennies that were made during World War I that are actually made out of steel, so they're blue. Because they had to use all the copper for ammunition for the war. And I remember taking these coins and thinking, wow, so cool! And I would bring them to school and hand it out to my classmates. And these are worth like maybe hundreds back then, probably thousands now. And I would just like get rid of these coins. I remember my dad sat me down one day and said, Mickey, listen, these coins, they're not just mine. They're yours. I collected these so that I could give it to you one day. What was he saying? This is your inheritance. And he's not saying you have to earn it or fight for it, or I'm only going to give this to you if you're good. It's simply given by virtue of relationship, right? If there was one hated people group back in Jesus' day, and maybe it's similar to today, it's the landlords, okay? People hated landlords. I don't know how much has changed. I mean, if anyone's a landlord in here, God bless you. But let me tell you why they hated the landlords back then, okay? Back then, not now, okay? Landlords were so hated back then because everyone knew that if you had land, if you had property, the only way that you could have gotten that land or possessed it was through some sort of violence or oppression, by holding on to it, hoarding it, and making the peasants pay a portion of their harvest. I guess not a lot has changed. But that's why Jesus' words were so revolutionary. He was saying, no, right now the landlords, they have all the land, they have all the property. And they rule by aggression and force and domination. But he's saying, no, it's you who are meek, who will not take the land, will not earn the land, but it's you who are meek who will inherit the land. You won't have to take it or fight for it or work for it or earn it. It will be given simply by virtue of relationship. You are God's children. You are God's son. You are God's daughter. And all that he has is already yours. And so this is the heart of what Jesus is saying. Seizing is the way of the world. Inheriting is the way of the kingdom. Seizing is the way of the world. Inheriting is the way of the kingdom. Is there no clearer picture of what meekness is not than back in 2021 at the insurrection on the Capitol? Right? When I think about that moment, a people storming the Capitol with violence and aggression, trying to seize power by force. But for me, as I was watching that, the most disheartening thing for me as a pastor was seeing how many Christians supported the actions of these insurrectionists. What broke my heart were there were Christians, self-professing Christians, who were part of that insurrection group. How backwards is that? When I think about Jesus, this was the complete opposite of what he was about. Instead of taking up the sword, he took up the cross. Instead of using violence and force to take power, he gave up his power. And to think that there were people who did this in his name. It's significant that the symbol of the Christian faith is not a sword. It's a cross. It's this idea of laying down your life in meekness. And the temptation that you and I face is to take for ourselves that which God promises to give us in our own time. To do in our strength what God promises to do for us by his power. To do in our own striving what God promises to give us by his provision. And so we try to advance our careers in our own striving. We try to find the perfect spouse in our own efforts. We try to take our lives into our own hands. And we won't stop until we get what we want by any means necessary. And here's the scary reality. When we bear the burden of trying to make things happen for ourselves, we almost always resort to violence and force and coercion and manipulation. You're just thinking, no, I'm not a violent person. No, we unintentionally leave a trail of destruction along the way. In our striving to achieve success, we leave a trail of used up people along the way. In our striving to find love and not end up lonely and alone at all costs, we leave a trail of broken hearts along the way. And in our self-sufficient pursuits, we ultimately commit violence against our very souls. We don't rest and we don't treat our souls the way that they need to be treated to be healthy and alive. Richard Rohr, he said, we are culturally taught that everything out there is hostile. I have to compare, dominate, control, and ensure. In brief, I have to be in charge. That need to be in charge moves us deeper and deeper into a world of anxieties. I don't know about you, but I can think of so many times in my life where I tried to move ahead of God and take matters into my own hands, in my career, in my ministry, in my pursuit of my significant other, in my relationships, and every single time, whether intentional or not, I end up causing harm to my soul or to others along the way, and drowning in the crushing weight of anxiety. This is not your portion. This is not our inheritance. Brian Zond, once again, he says, there is a besetting paranoia that plagues the superpower mentality, and it is most often manifest in an anxious obsession with security. Anxiety over security is the price the aggressive pay for clawing their way to the top. They are fated to live in constant dread that someone will take away their position of privilege. They wonder about who might be hot on their heels. But Jesus, endorsing the psalmist, says there is another way. A way that is blessed and peaceful, the way of radical trust. The meek are not the driven, self-assertive, hyper-aggressive, grab-my-piece-of-the-pie people. They are not the winners and the go-getters, the movers and the shakers, the large and in charge. The meek are the ones who believe in God and are willing to trust God for their portion and their security. The way of violence and aggression is the way of Caesar, but the way of meekness and trust is the way of Christ. And they are in contradiction to one another. Is there anything in your life that you're trying to take by force? Trying to obtain by your own strength and will? Anything you're trying to make work for yourself instead of trusting in God? Maybe it's your career. Maybe it's your future spouse. Maybe it's your relationship. Maybe it's your ministry. The invitation today is to stop striving and seizing and enter into rest. This doesn't mean we stop trying. It simply means once we have done our best and tried our best, we trust God with the results. The meek trust that God has an inheritance for them. They believe that God won't leave them high and dry, and so they trust in God to fight their battles. That's the posture of meekness. So number one, meekness is an invitation into rest. But the second thing and the last thing, meekness is an invitation into resistance. I know that's strong language talking about, you know, not being aggressive or violent. But meekness is strength. It's power in resistance. Now, the word meek in our passage today is this Greek word praus. And some interpret it to mean power under control, just like we talked about. But there are other theologians who translate it this way. The meek are the socially powerless. Right? The meek are those who are looked down on, discarded, and ignored by the movers and the shakers of society. It's the intern at your office who's the name the boss always seems to forget, right? It's the quiet kid in the back of the classroom whose great anxiety is just making it through another hour of lunch. It's the person on Instagram with like 9 followers with absolutely no influence or pull. The Bible Project actually says the best translation of this word might be unimportant. Blessed are the unimportant, for they will inherit the earth. Now, the second phrase in this beatitude, for they will inherit the earth, is taken directly from Psalm 37, which is all about God's plan to elevate the poor and the oppressed, to elevate the meek and the unimportant to inherit the land, while the oppressor loses everything that propped up their comfort and their status. It's an ancient prayer asking God to turn the tables around. For those who survive off the scraps of the tables of the rich, for the lonely, for the forgotten, for the uninvited, for those who are forced to grind without rest, it's a prophetic declaration that the unimportant are seen by the King of Kings. Catch that. The unimportant, they're no longer ignored or overlooked. They're called important in God's kingdom, and they're seen by the creator of the universe. And so meekness is an invitation into resistance. Resisting what? Resistance against the value systems of our world, who dictate who's important and who's unimportant. Resistance against a culture that favors some people, the popular, while discards the other people, the uncool. And so meekness is an invitation for you and I to tell the unimportant, you are important. To tell the unseen that you are seen. To tell the overlooked, you have value and worth, that God sees them, that we see them, and to treat the unimportant as important enough and worthy enough of respect and honor and love. It's affirming the hard work of that coworker who's always overlooked and passed over. It's spending time with that socially awkward person, reminding them that they're worthy of relationship and presence too. It's stopping to have a conversation with the person that you pass by on the street every single morning to work to ask about their lives and show them that they are seen. Can you think of anyone in your life that might feel unimportant? This week, this beatitude invites us to remind them of their inheritance, to tell them that you are seen and you are known and you are loved. And so meekness is an invitation to rest, and meekness is an invitation into resistance. Let's close with this quote from A.W. Tozer. It says, the meek person is not a human mouse afflicted with a sense of his own inferiority. Rather, he may be in his moral life as bold as a lion and as strong as Samson, but he has stopped being fooled about himself. He has accepted God's estimate of his own life. He knows he is as weak and helpless as God declared him to be, but paradoxically, he knows at the same time that he is, in the sight of God, of more importance than angels, in himself nothing, in God everything. There's this moment, I'll close with this story. I keep saying that. That's what preachers do. Isn't it so annoying? But I'm really closing with this story. There's a moment when Jesus is being arrested. I don't know if you remember. It's the eve of his arrest. And Peter, the guards come and they're trying to arrest him. And Peter, you know, he's kind of like the ambitious disciple. He always moves ahead of Jesus sometimes. But Peter, with all the good intentions in the world, he draws his sword. And to protect Jesus from being arrested, he slices off the ear of one of the high priest's servants in an attempt to protect Jesus. And Jesus, he does something astounding. He tells Peter, put your sword away. Put down your sword. And he touches the servant's ear and he heals him. Listen, in our day and age, we love the Jesus who flips over tables. We hate the Jesus who lays down the sword. Come on, be on Instagram for one moment. We love to flip over tables and say we need justice and reformation. That's all important. But we forget that the way Jesus revolutionized the world was by laying down the sword. He didn't play the game of our culture and our world. And I feel like many of us in this room, we've taken up our swords. And we're striving and we're chasing and we're forcing and we're seizing. And even with all the best intentions, we're doing damage to ourselves. We're striking others. We're cutting ourselves and we're making a mess of our lives. But I hear the voice of Jesus this morning saying, lay down your sword. You don't have to fight anymore. You don't have to seize the way the world sees. You don't have to win this battle. I've already won it for you. And I see him prophetically healing the pain that we have caused ourselves and caused others and the wounds we've inflicted on ourselves and on others, and inviting us to finally rest, to lay down our swords and rest. The posture of meekness, if I could leave you with one lasting image, the posture of meekness is an open hand instead of a clenched fist. And this is the invitation this morning. Right now, why don't we close our eyes as we reflect on the word of the Lord for this morning? I want you to ask yourself, where in your life, where in your world are you trying to make it happen for yourself? Where in your life, where in your world are you trying to make your success, your endeavors, everything that you work on happen by your own means, striving, and strength? Lay down your sword.